Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone from the entertainment world. My guest today is Donnie James from the absolutely wonderful rock band Blackbone Child. These guys are what rock is all about. Donnie, welcome to the program.
Hi, Simon. How you doing?
I am doing just great. And I'll tell you what. Before we start this interview, how about we dip into the Blackbone Child catalog and let listeners hear just how good you are.
That sounds good to me.
Let's sample a track off your CD, Alligator. How does Be Your Man sound?
Sounds good to me.
Alrighty. So, this is Blackbone Child, Be Your Man. Good rock and roll.
I like to think so too. You know, that's what we try to do.
Donnie, I believe we have talked before. It was a while ago. I hope things are going well. What have you been up to in the past year?
Well, yeah, we spoke last year right around this time, actually. We just got done with a whole week of South by Southwest here in Austin. And we talked to you last year from South by Southwest. And in the past year, we've gone on a handful of tours. We've kind of toured from California to Pennsylvania and back to Austin, and kind of all over the place. And now, you know, the reason that we're talking, we have these two new CDs that we've been working on throughout the winter, and one of which is acoustic. It's called Take You Blind. And the other one's electric, which we just heard, which is called Alligator. And Kenny and I, who are the main members in the band, basically just decided that throughout the winter we were going to put a couple records together for South by Southwest and during that time and release them. And so that's kind of taken up between, you know, the live shows and the records. That's taken up the majority of our past year.
Were you involved with South by Southwest this year? I think it's just finished or still going?
Yeah, it just finished this last weekend, and we played during South by Southwest. We got an offer to play, opening up for a guy named Bob Schneider, who's actually doing fairly well, I guess, in the national market. And we took him up on the offer to open for him, and played in downtown Austin, and it was a really good show. It was a lot of fun. You know, he's a good artist and has a decent following, and we're kind of at the point in our careers right now where it's exciting to open up for other people and gain new fans. So it was a great show, and we promoted as much as we could while everybody's in town. I think there's a couple hundred thousand people or something that come into Austin during South By, so we wanted to take advantage of that and went out and talked to a bunch of people, saw, you know, friends in the industry, and had pretty much just a crazy week.
Oh, South By Southwest is one of those deals that one of these years I am going to go to. I think I got three or four emails from people I know who were, you know, asking me if I was going to be there and, you know, telling me where they were going to be at. And, you know, I said to my wife, you know, honey, Is it okay if I take off to Austin for a week? And she said, well, sure, but I don't know how you're going to pay for it.
It can be really expensive. I mean, even just getting into the town, you know, is expensive. But then the actual festival, it can definitely add up.
Right. Maybe we could start with a little background. Who is Donnie James, and who are Blackbone Child?
I am Donnie, and I'm a guitar player that was born in San Francisco, actually, and kind of made my way out to Austin. I have family out this way. And I ran into, I was in Southern California for a while when I was a kid, and I played in a band with Kenny, who is our bass player in this band, and I came out to Austin and decided I wanted to start up a band that kind of had a blues bass to it, a fun rock and roll band, and I called him because he was a drummer. He's a really good drummer, actually, and on our first record, he played the drums and the bass and everything, but I called him up, and we decided to start this whole thing up, so we wrote the first album through email back and forth, and he was in San Diego and I was in Austin, Texas, and we got that going, and all of a sudden we started getting reactions from it, so we decided to have everybody out here, you know, and he moved out this way and started putting together a live band, and then we got a chance to have two new players come to the live show and play with us, because we just can't cover everything with the two of us, and those two players are Jason King and Steve Hudson. Jason plays guitar and Steve plays drums. And they're a great addition to the live show, really pick up the energy to everything. And when that happened and we went out and started playing live more, you know, we wanted to capture what that live sound was like a little bit more, so we brought them into the studio for this new recording. But Steve and Jason are both Austin natives, and Kenny and I are from out of town, obviously, but it's kind of cool, you know, having people from all over the U.S. get together and play music that's, you know, that we're all into. And sometimes it's hard when you're coming from different areas.
Well, what I find interesting is, you know, I think of Austin, Texas, and inevitably I think of country music. But, oh, I don't think Blackbone Child is country.
I wouldn't classify it as such, although I've heard a lot of weird combinations of genres that people like to call it.
Is there a big rock and roll audience in Austin?
I believe so. Out of all the cities that I've been in, I'd say Austin is definitely up there with some of the top rock bands around. It's a small community, so that it's not like, you know, Los Angeles or New York, you know, where you have, you know, a lot of bands. I mean, there still are a lot of bands, but they're spread out through different genres. One of the things that Kenny and I really want to get going is get a good rock scene in Austin, you know, and make it famous for not only country, you know, and independent music and things like that, but also rock and roll, because there's a lot of people here that have been listening to blues, you know, since they were kids, and that's the basis of any type of rock and roll music. So there's definitely the potential here. We have our handful of friends that are in, you know, local bands that are, you know, all sorts of different rock bands. And basically what we're trying to do is anytime you see us in Austin, it's a rock show. You know, it's good rock and roll. Everybody has a good time. You know, people are dancing, not beating the crap out of each other in the audience.
Yeah. But you mean there's no mosh pit involved?
No, no. And, you know, I understand why people like all that stuff and everything, but, you know, the reason we started this band was to have a good time and get back to, you know, making music move you and not run in a circle and elbow each other. Like, you shouldn't leave our show with a bloody eye, you know.
Yeah, it was a great concert. They carried me out on a stretcher.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've never understood that, you know. I'm all about having music make you move, and I think that's really the reason that I got into music in the first place. So that's kind of what we've based everything around, and we're trying to find bands that are in the same place, you know. And I think the first band that really turned me on to that was Mars Volta. When I started listening to them and I went to one of their shows, the lead singer got to the front of the stage and said, you know, I understand you guys want to run around and beat each other up, but we're here to dance, and if you don't like that, then you can leave. And everybody really got into it, and I saw this whole crowd of, you know, maybe 5,000 people dancing, and it was a really cool thing to witness, you know, and I saw that and went, I want to do that, you know, and that's kind of where we're at.
How long have you all been together?
The band's been together for over a year and a half now. It's still a pretty young band. Kenny and I started writing the stuff, I'd say, a little over 2 years ago, and then, you know, started playing live a little over a year and a half ago with the guys. It took us a while to find musicians that we really wanted to be in the band, you know, because not only did they have to be good musicians, but we also had to click, because we're going to be spending a lot of time in a van together. So if we can't get along, it's going to make for a very horrible experience.
Oh, indeed. That gets old very quickly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and we know all about that, too. And luckily, you know, with this band, we're all really enjoying each other's company. And really, I mean, the band's just about having a good time, you know, and it starts with the people on stage. And if they're not having a good time, then the audience sure isn't. So that's kind of, you know, the basis of the entire experience is everybody smile, have a good time, get away from your desk job and come out and have a beer.
Right. Who plays what in the band?
I sing and I play guitar. And Kenny, he is a bass player and he plays harmonica. And he actually sings on a couple of the songs on the new records. And live, you know, we'll go back and forth with stuff. Jason King plays guitar as well, and Steve Hudson plays drums. And Kenny does, you know, dabble with some other stuff, and every once in a while we'll have him get on a drum kit or something, but that's pretty much the layout of the band.
The harmonica is a great touch. And I was listening to the two new albums today, and I have to admit, I closed my eyes and I thought about it, and it reminded me a lot about some early Rolling Stones material. Are they a musical influence to you?
I mean, I think you can't be in a rock and roll band without having some type of influence from the Rolling Stones or the Beatles. You know, that's just kind of like a given. Honestly, I don't even own a Stones record, I don't think. I never really liked them that much. I do listen to it every once in a while here and there, but I'd say it's not really a major influence. The harmonica kind of happened by mistake. It's a sound that Kenny and I have always really liked, you know, and we listen to a lot of older blues stuff, and, you know, hearing that old blues harmonica, there's just something that's so, I guess, front porch about it. And we just thought it was a real cool sound. It's something that a lot of people don't really touch on in rock and roll bands and haven't for a long time. And so we were listening to one of the first songs that we had recorded ever, and we were sitting there, and I was like, you know what this song needs is a harmonica, but neither one of us could play. And it just so happened that we had a harmonica that was in the right tuning for the song, and he said, oh, well, I'll give it a shot. And the first take that he did is what we ended up keeping on it. He's just born with the talent to play harmonica and never knew it. And from that moment on, you know, it became a focal point for a lot of people in our music. And so on this last record, on the electric one, we were listening to it, and we were just saying, you know, it's too heavy, it's not upbeat enough. And so we started messing around with the harmonica, and like as we added it to each song, it all started making a lot of sense. So I think it comes more from a production standpoint than it really does any types of influences, you know. But since then, I think both of our ears have kind of perked up to harmonica players a little bit more. And there's a band in town, I think they're called Porter Davis, and they have a harmonica player that is just amazing, you know. And I remember going to one of their shows and watching him and just going like, oh, that's how you're supposed to play it, you know. And so, yeah, I'd say it comes more from a production standpoint than an influence, really.
I have to admit that it adds a layer to the music, and it's a wonderful layer, you know. You just drift away into the song, you know, and it's such a simple instrument in many ways, but it can add so much to a tune.
It really can. You know, and we experienced that with there's a song on our album called Take You Blind, the acoustic album. The name of the song is Baby Baby, and we were listening to it, and that was, again, another thing where I was like, well, let's throw harmonica on it. It seems to be working. And the second the harmonica got on the song, it took on this whole new color, and all of a sudden, you know, it worked its way up to the top of the CD and is now, you know, one of our personal favorites on the record, whereas before we were discussing not even putting it on the record. So that, I don't know what it is, but that tone, like I said, there's something real personal about it, and just real, and I think people connect with it. Something about, you know, nothing more than just a harmonica and you that's entertaining just naturally to people.
Yeah, that could be. I'm always interested in the music development process. Is there one composing force in the band, or is it a collaborative effort?
It's definitely collaborative. You know, Kenny and I really are the ones that do all the writing and everything. It's kind of our brainchild, and then we have the guys that play with us, you know, live and as it happens to be on Alligator. But Kenny and I are both kind of the driving forces behind everything, and there's not really an order of how it works with he and I. it can come from a riff or a drum beat or a vocal melody or anything. And what we try to do is we try to write a song kind of halfway and then deliver it to the other person and have them go and play with it for a while and bring it back and then, you know, work on it a little bit more and keep moving it around. And he and I both have little small project studios, and that's kind of the formula that seems to work for us, is working in separate rooms from each other. And I think that comes from writing this first record that we did, or the first record that we did, between emails back and forth when he was living in a different city. For some reason, when we can sit alone in a dark room with nothing but, you know, a guitar or a bass or harmonica and playback, we tend to kind of get lost in ourselves a little bit more, and you're a little bit less vulnerable, but kind of by yourself, and it just pulls out an emotion that's different than if you're sitting in a room with a band trying to argue about how many times you do a riff or something. And it just seems to work for us. You know, we figured it out, sort of. And we've tried to write together in a room multiple times since he's moved out, and the result just isn't the same. I don't know why.
I know the answer to my next question. If I was to ask it about, Take You Blind, I'd be stupid. But I'm going to ask it about Alligator. Do you start with the lyrics, or do you start with the tune?
I'd say about 90% of the time we start with the tune. There's definitely been instances where phrases and things have been, you know, thought up, and then we write a song around that. But most of the stuff that ends up on a record starts with the music first. And that's just the way that I've always written, personally. I have a hard time sitting down and writing poetry and then transferring that into something that has, you know, rhythm. My mind kind of works the opposite way. And that argument goes on and on between musicians. You know, there's certain people that can't write the music without the lyrics there.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I would say that pretty much that's a 50-50 split. Whenever I ask the question, you know, half the time it's, oh, I have the music first, and half the time it's, I have the lyrics. And once I have the lyrics, the music just arrives.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of based around different genres, too. It kind of depends on what you're playing. I mean, you know, for a singer-songwriter kind of thing, or, I brought up Tom Waits, somebody like that, it makes a lot of sense to do the lyrics first because they kind of give the song a tone. Whereas with a more, you know, rock and roll-based band like ourselves, a lot of it has to do with the energy and the rhythm and the feel and all that, and that kind of tells you what you need to write about, and then you find something either in your life or people around you or, you know, whatever influence you can find that has the same kind of emotion as what the song does. And, sometimes you'll write the music, and then you'll write the lyrics, and then the music changes because the lyrics have created this new atmosphere that you have to go towards. And it's just, there's no formula to it, in my opinion. I don't think there's any right or wrong way. Just music is music, and it either moves people or it doesn't.
In fact, on the subject of music, why don't we take a musical break and sample a track off your other CD, Take Me Blind? How does By My Hand grab you?
Sounds good to me.
Alrighty.
Before.
Is that a slide guitar?
It is.
It is. So well done.
Thank you.
Is that you playing it?
Yeah. You know, it's another instrument, another form of an instrument, at least, that I feel is very personal to people. And there's just something about the tone of that that I've always been really interested in. You know, the Blind Willie Johnsons of the world and things like that. And so I wanted to incorporate that in my style of playing with this band. I didn't want to just be another, you know, guitar guy that comes in and tries to play as many licks as he can. You know, I'm a very rhythmic player myself, and I feel like you can do more with three notes than you can with five. And so that's kind of what that song was actually based around. I came in with a riff that I'd played at one point, and Kenny actually played drums on that. And we just set up a mic in the room, and that was pretty much it. You know, it was very primitive, and that was the goal of that record. The whole record was recorded and mastered and mixed and everything in a period of 30 hours. And the goal behind it, the goal behind it was to make it really naked. And if there's mistakes, leave them. And, you know, we know how to really produce things, and that was like a different step for us to take a deep breath, let go, and kind of show ourselves a little bit more, you know, primitively. And we wanted to prove that we had another side to the band, and we weren't just, you know, a bunch of loud guitars. I mean, there's a lot of melody and rhythm that's going on. And so, yeah, it's just a real naked recording and kind of is what it is, you know.
You're saying it's naked, but in actual fact, it's a very, very rich song. I mean, the slide guitar just works so well. I mean, you're selling yourself short.
Well, I mean, you know, the riff isn't, there's nothing about it is very complicated or, you know, requires too much attention. It's just, I think with that backbeat that's going on with the drums and the way that the guitar fits inside of it and the standard scaling of, you know, a 1 and a 5, you know, the blues scaling on it. It's just, you know, to me as a guitar player, it's just real simple, but I love playing the riff, and they're really hard to come by, and that's definitely a song that I'm very proud of. You know, when I say naked, I don't mean that in a bad way. You know, I think it's good that it is, but it's just one guitar. It's not like we layered a bunch of stuff on there, you know.
Well, I think you should pat yourself on the back, you know, and consider that a job very well done.
Thank you.
When did Alligator and Take Me Blind hit the streets?
It's called Take You Blind, just so you know.
Oh, sorry, Take You
listening.
Blind.
Yeah. it was released on the 9th of March, so it's pretty new. It was just released, you know, right before South by Southwest, and, you know, just kind of came out digitally first, and then we're slowly getting the physical distribution out there.
I spend a lot of time guessing about stuff. I guess it's what I do. And when it comes to music, you know, one of the silent questions I ask myself is whether a band is a studio band or a live band. My guess is you guys are most definitely a live band, that there's a vibrancy in the music that just pulls the listener in. I can't believe that you would take the studio over the stage anytime.
Yeah, I really like playing live. I mean, that's what really drives me. You know, ever since I've been really little, I've wanted to be on the road and out playing music for people. You know, I like standing up in front of people and entertaining. And I know that Kenny is the same way, and, you know, the other guys in the band very much so as well. We all kind of have this drive to do that. But at the same time, I mean, I really do like being in the studio. I do. I enjoy that process. Sometimes it can be, you know, very taxing and
and long. But as I do this more and more, I'm learning how to get away from sitting on something, you know, doing guitar takes for 3 weeks, you know. And that's just kind of something you learn with time. But as we play live, we get better in the studio as well, because we start to develop a little bit of a unit, and it makes it easier when we go in and set up microphones. We're just doing what we do, you know, and we're just capturing it now. So, I don't know. I think we're definitely both, but our heart definitely belongs on the stage.
Oh, yeah. I would imagine you have a great, great stage presence. Yeah, I base that just on the music alone.
Well, I mean, that's good when we can sell that on the record, you know, to make somebody feel that way, because that's really what we want everyone to do, is to come out and see us live, and that's really what the recordings are about for us, is an advertisement of the live show, and we're definitely really into it and very comfortable on a stage, and it's taken a while for me to get to that point. You know, it's not always easy to just go stand up, you know, and play in front of everyone, but as we've gone on with this, it's just, I love it more and more, and the studio recording is an example of what we do live, but it's just honed in on a little bit, and I kind of like it being a little bit more on the edge of breaking up, you know, and a little bit uncertain the way that it is in a live presence.
And to me, your genre of music, I would call absolute classic rock. What kind of age group tend to follow you? You know, when you walk into or walk onto the stage, are they youngsters? Are they or are they old people like me?
We see a combination of everything across the board. I'd say that the people that are most into it are probably in their late 20s, early 30s, and probably female. But, you know, everybody, you know, we have all sorts of different people at our shows. We have some fans that are older, and we have some fans that are younger. One of the things that was important to us is not fitting into a genre that's going to, you know, keep us at one point in time where we lose originality because we all went and bought a bunch of vintage gear and we're trying to sound exactly like Led Zeppelin or something, you know, because that's obviously not the goal of the band. And at the same time, we don't want to get stuck with, you know, the skinny jean indie, you know, emo pop that's going on right now, you know, because in my opinion, all that stuff kind of goes away with time, and we're trying to create something that's a little bit more timeless, where if you listen to it in 10 years, it's not going to sound dated. And, it's something that's very difficult to do, to get people from a bunch of different age groups into it and all be able to be in a place and still have it be considered cool. But as we play more and more, you know, we're seeing more people show up, and especially with the younger crowd. The younger crowd is a lot harder to sell to because they're just so caught up with whatever other thing they have going on in their life. And as we see more of them show up and everything, it's kind of giving us a little bit more solidification of, you know, yeah, word of mouth is happening. We're out there. People are talking about the music. And it's considered cool to, you know, multiple age groups.
If I was heading to the Austin area anytime soon, where could I find you guys?
Well, in Austin, for a while, we were playing basically once a week, you know, if not twice a week, and we were really out there a lot. And as we've seen, you know, more of a fan base grow, we've started to slow down on shows and try to consolidate them all to, you know, one big show and have everyone there and enjoy it together. And so the next show that we're going to play that we really are excited about is we're playing for the Dead Weather After Show, which is Jack White's new band. And we're doing that at Stubbs Barbecue here, which is a big amphitheater, and we're going to play inside at this after party. And you can buy tickets to get in, or if you have tickets to the Dead Weather show, you get in for free to ours. And we play around town, too, other places, you know, the Antones of the world and things like that. And actually tonight I'm playing at a small place called the Saxon Pub. We're playing at 11 o'clock. And that's always fun because it's so much more intimate. And everybody's just kind of right there in front of you. And I think the place only holds about 300 or 400 people. But it's a lot more fun, you know, to be in that closer environment sometimes.
Right. Although it is arguable that it's better to be way away from the folks if they don't like you.
True. <Yeah.
laughs> Although
very true.
I can't see that being applicable to Blackburn Child. I mean, your music is wonderful. In this wired age, you must have a website or 4 or 5.
Yeah.
Where can people find you online?
You can go to blackbonechild.com, and from there at the bottom of the page, there's links to all of our social networks, you know, the Twitters, MySpace, Facebook, YouTube, et cetera,
et cetera. Oh, good Lord. You've got them all.
yeah. You have to now, you know. I mean, it's almost like, you know, part of the job is just managing networks. And we still manage ours on our own, and we do that so that we have a little bit more of a connection with fans. And, you know, people can contact us directly and know that it's us and not just some, you know, college student sitting somewhere getting paid minimum wage to answer questions.
Right. And where can people buy copies of your CDs?
You can go any of the online stores, iTunes, Amazon, Napster, CD Baby, eMusic, all that stuff. And then if you want physical copies, you can get them from CD Baby, or you can order them from Waterloo Records, which is our local record store here, which we like to support.
So that you do actually have CDs in a bricks and mortar store?
We do, believe it
wow.
or not.
No, I am so surprised. I mean, number one, there's almost no music stores left. And number two, you're in one.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, actually in Austin, there's a handful of CD stores. There's some pretty decent ones, too. And you're seeing a very big return of vinyl records. I mean, that's really big right now amongst a lot of the indie crowd and stuff. And that's something that we're definitely going to do in the future. We don't have any plans to do it right now, but I'd like to see that come back. You know, there's something about holding on to the product and, you know, putting it on a turntable and dropping a needle on it that just feels so good. It's mechanical, and music is mechanical. You know, it's analog. That's when you go to see it live, it's vibrations in the air. It's not ones and zeros, so... Hopefully, you know, there'll be enough fans that get back into that to necessitate more record stores, because it's a thing I hope doesn't go away. Spent a lot of time as a kid going into record stores and listening to new music.
And actually, I read a fascinating press release today. I can't remember the gentleman's name, but he used to be a Russian intelligence operative, you know, a thug for the KGB. And he's now created a new home business. He hand-builds classic high-end stereo systems using tubes, not transistors. And these things sell for $200,000 a piece.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. You know, that's I'm sure it sounds really, really good too. But man, that's a lot of money.
Oh yeah, no kidding.
But that goes to show that there's people out there that are still listening to music that way, that are still avid fans of music, and it's not just a background thing. It's something that they, you know, evolve their life around. And
If you talk to an audiophile, every one of them will say, oh, best sound comes from vacuum tubes. You know, it's got a richer, more natural sound. Transistors and solid state just doesn't work.
And I mean, it depends on the application, too, because I think there's certain instances where that stuff does work. But as a guitarist myself, you know, there's no other option to having vacuum tubes in your guitar amp. There's just, you know, there's no solid-state amp that I've found that, you know, has that same warmth to it. And I think it just has to do with, you know, like I said, it's not getting converted to digital. It's still the vibrations. It's just transformed into electricity. But the vibrations are still what they are, you know. It doesn't turn into numbers.
Okay, we're just about out of time, but I do want to ask one last question. I believe that the very first track played on MTV was Video Killed the Radio Star by the Bugles. Are CDs a thing of the past? The new way seems to be DVDs. Have you considered releasing a DVD?
We have considered releasing DVDs. At this point right now, we just don't have enough, you know, video accumulated to put together one that would be very interesting. You know, through time, hopefully at some point we can release something. And it may even be just a digital download kind of thing, but release some type of, you know, video that follows the band through the growth process. And I've always been a big fan of that when other bands do that. I think CDs are going to be a thing of the past at some point. And I think it's kind of a medium that's really useless when you have the ability to download music or go and get a vinyl. Because a vinyl is different in many ways, but a CD is just this plastic thing, and the artwork's really small, and it's just not practical in comparison to having downloads and things. But the reason they're still around is because the downloads haven't reached the point where they're high enough quality. They're still these MP3s, and even at 192, it still just doesn't have the right, you know, the right sound to it. It's not the full CD. It's not the full audio quality. I know a lot of fans don't really care about that sort of thing, but that's why the CD is still sticking around, in my opinion. And
Donnie, we're about to lose our live listeners. Live listeners, you can rest assured that the entire program will be available for download. I'm sorry, Donnie. Carry on.
Oh, it's quite all right. I think CDs are going to be a thing of the past when you start seeing in cars, you know, a little bit more satellite internet, where if you want something, you just say it and it downloads it, that sort of thing. You know, CDs will become less and less popular, which they already have. I mean, they're almost obsolete as it is now. But there's always going to be a physical product, in my opinion, because you can't, there's no value to just a file. You know, and I know some people would just like to have it on their computer, have it in their playlist, but somebody who's really into music, they're going to want to purchase something and hold it in their hands. And I don't see that going away anytime soon.
Oh, I'm with you. I like music. I like books. I read more books than should be legal. And you know, there's something wonderful about holding a book in your hand. I have, Lord knows how many, electronic books, and they're just not the same.
Yeah.
You know, I love the fact that I have something physical, something
right.
Real. You know, a computer file doesn't do that.
Right. Well, and there's things that go along with it, too, you know, the smell and the feel of the paper and for the whole experience, you know, in reading a book. It's a lot different than holding an electronic screen. And whereas, you know, electronic may be very practical, that sense of value kind of gets lost with it. And that's how I feel about vinyls and things like that. You know, when you hold on to it and you put it, you actually have it there and you put it down on the turntable and you put the needle down and you see the needle, you know, moving, and that's the whole reason the sound's coming out. There's something that just I connect with. I don't know why, but it feels good.
Well, unfortunately, our time is up. Donnie, I really want to thank you for taking time out to talk with us this afternoon. And I know I speak for everyone at Blogger News Network in wishing you and Blackbone Child the absolute best in the future. And I'm in Mississippi, so I'm not a million miles away from Austin. One of these days, we are going to make it out there, and we're going to be checking out Blackbone Child live.
We'll have to do that, and we're actually, I don't know where you are in Mississippi, but we're coming to Jackson pretty soon here.
Jackson. We'll we're somewhat south of there. Small town called Picayune.
Well, maybe one day we'll make it near you.
Right. But if your tour bus happens to be anywhere near Picayune, you make sure you stop by. We'll have an impromptu concert on the back lawn.
Okay. That sounds good to me.
All right. You have yourself a wonderful day.
Thank you, Simon. Thank you very much.
Okay. Talk to you again. Bye.
All right.